Hello and welcome to this episode of Press X, the show that only comes down quite a few times of the year. Well, once a year.
Not once a year. We're kind of sporadic with this.
Anyway, I'm with Rob today.
Hello. But who are you, mysterious stranger?
And I am Andy. See, I'm getting the hang of these introductions, Rob, aren't I?
You are. You're fine introducing me, but yourself...
Well, yeah, sometimes you do forget yourself, don't you?
Yeah, but that means something completely different, doesn't it?
Anyway, we're viewing, is it five games altogether today?
Yeah, we got five games. But before we get into those, Press X is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. We like what we do. If you like what we do, then show your support. Make a donation or buy one of our lovely bits and merchandise. All those links can be found on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, or just email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk.
We are still going to use reviews lightly today.
Well, yes and no, because I have some issues, and they're not video game related. I know, I have to see a doctor about them. We've got a pile of games that we've been saving up, and it's time to get them all done in one go, because we've got another pile of games that we're going to have to get off our chests at some point. So me and Andy are going to take the opportunity to work through our issues on these games first. This is like, you know, video game therapy for us.
Definitely.
So I'm going to kick off with what a lot of people have started calling waifu wars. You know what waifu is, yeah?
No.
Waifu is a term that a lot of otaku and weebs have started using for their fictional girlfriend turned wife. They call it waifu.
Ah, I thought it was like some weird
martial art. Yeah.
Type.
No. I look at it and I think, you know, it looks like a martial art. I just want to walk up to somebody at a convention. I want to go to somebody at an anime convention and say, "Your waifu is not strong." You know, like it's some kind of martial arts movie.
I was going to say that would be a very like weird Jackie Chan film.
Oh, don't, because Jackie Chan's just done a film recently called Kung Fu Yoga, and if it was called Waifu Yoga, that's a totally different film.
I was going to say The Waifu Kid, but that sounds very wrong anyway.
The Waifu Kid. Oh, that's totally different as well. We're not going there. Anyway, the actual game that I'm talking about is Fate Extella, The Umbral Star, which is part of the Fate Stay Night franchise by Type Moon. And Fate Stay Night is a very well-known anime franchise. It started off as a visual novel, kind of an erotic visual novel type thing by Type Moon. It had three distinct but separate but connected storylines that went through, and these were parallel storylines, so it was basically the same story but told differently. And one of them was Fate Stay Night, and the other one was Unlimited Blade Works, and the final one was Heaven's Feel. And then after that came Fate Zero, which were the original novels were written by Urobuchi Gen, who's an amazing writer. And then Fate Zero got made into an anime series. Before then, Unlimited Blade Works got made into a movie, right? But it wasn't a very good movie. Fate Zero came along, changed the entire ballgame, right, by being exceptionally good. Then Unlimited Blade Works got remade. And in between that, we had a bunch of games coming out. One of those games has come out recently called Fate Extella, The Umbral Star. And this is basically the Fate Stay Night story, but completely different again. Right? Are you following so far, Andy?
Yes.
Barely. You're holding on.
You're going to have to explain what very different means in a minute.
Yes, I am. Right. There are certain things that stay the same throughout any Fate story, right? Because there's all sorts of manga and various things like that. There's various anime spin-offs and all sorts of other things. Fate Extella is what I'm actually just going to call it now, right? It's the first game in what's known as Fate Extra. And Fate Extra is a dungeon crawl style JRPG that was created for the PSP. believe it or not.
Hmm.
Right? And that's the thing. Fate Extella actually comes from Fate Extra. It's not so much a remake, but more of a complete re-envisioning of...
Yeah.
It's a new game, and it's set after the events of the Holy Grail War. Now, in the Fate franchise, there is always going to be a Holy Grail War, right? There will be a Holy Grail somewhere in there if it's called Fate. And Fate Extella is actually the sequel to a game that came out on the PSP called Fate Extra, right?
Mm.
And in this new game, you basically have a version of one of the most famous servants. These servants are basically heroic beings from history and mythology who have been summoned to do battle by a bunch of mages. There's one mage, one servant, and they fight over the Holy Grail. The Holy Grail is won, somebody gets their wish, blah, blah, blah. Job done, yeah?
Mm.
One of the most famous ones is known as Saber, and Saber's real name is actually Arturia. She is kind of a female version of King Arthur, right? The King of Knights. Now, in Fate Extra and Fate Extella, you have a version of Saber called Nero Claudius, who is basically Saber, but red, and for some reason has, you know, likes roses and things like that, and is a bit of a waifu to you, right? You following so far?
Yeah.
Right.
To a point.
Yeah. So anyway, you wake up, you are the main character, you wake up, and your memories are all jumbled up. There's things that you can't remember, things that you can. There's a very long kind of talking head scenes that lead you into the game and basically set the scene of the story for you. Now, if you've never played Fate Extra, you know, this can be a bit of a kind of what the hell's going on moment.
Yeah.
If you have played Fate Extra, that will probably alleviate a little bit of it, but I'm not sure, right? Because I've never played Fate Extra, and so I was sitting there scratching my head going, I don't know what's going on. Right? Now, you basically wake up, you have obtained the Regalia Ring, you apparently won the previous Holy Grail War, and now you've been given control over what's known as the Mooncell Automaton. It's a massive, hyper, mega, giga computer type thing that has this reality control, has the power to grant a wish, and you are basically taking over new areas, but there are enemies who are attacking, and so your servant, Nero, and your other servants, I can't remember who they are, I think it's Archer, Lancer, and somebody else, I can't remember who the last one is, I think it's Ryder. So you have three other servants, aside from Saber, and you have to fight alongside your servants, the main one of whom is Nero Claudius, that version of Saber, and you fight in these areas in a Dynasty Warriors-style combat system, which is very flashy and very fluid and really fast-paced, but ultimately unsatisfying.
Unsatisfying?
Yes. Now, here's the thing. You basically are in an enclosed area in a 1 versus 1,000 environment, right?
Yeah.
And I've moved on to the combat system because there is because this is one of my main gripes. The problem I have with the combat system is that, like some of the early Dynasty Warriors games, they basically, you have all the enemies look the same, and so you have some difficulty finding out who are the main enemy bad guys that you need to take out in order to progress the fight. So you could spend 5, 10, 15 minutes on the same fight, right, and not having killed the right bad guys, not having done the right things, because it's very quick at telling you, but it's very quick to forget in the heat of the moment. Right? So I spent ages on the first couple of fights running around, killing all the bad guys, thinking, I just have to kill everything here. Not realizing that those bad guys are respawning as fast as I kill them, because I haven't taken out the right bad guys to basically delay the respawning. So I'm still running around killing stuff.
So you're there for about an hour, just basically in a never-ending cycle of
violence.
Combat. And, yeah. Well, I take it it'll drag.
It does. It does. This is what I mean. You know, it's fluid. It's fun. The combat is fantastic initially, right? It's very fast paced. It's very fluid. It's very flashy. Lots of effects when you pull off the special moves, stuff like that. It's great. And easily, you know, initially it looks like it easily rivals anything that comes from, you know, comes from Tecmo Koei, for Dynasty Warriors. And this is a game by Marvelous, right? So saying that is quite an achievement. But ultimately, it's very shallow combat because you only have this limited move set. You can upgrade various other bits, right? You can upgrade your health and your power and stuff like that. And you can even get new characters who basically, these become your servants and you could fight with them instead of Nero Claudius. But for the initial part of the game, you're fighting with Nero Claudius, and you'll probably become very familiar with Nero Claudius. So when it comes to fighting with somebody else and playing through their story, right, you'd have to start from the beginning in order to get used to them. Do you see? Because it does allow you to play through each servant's story, and that's fine. There are three main paths through the story, and one of them is Nero Claudius, and the other two are for, I call them waifus, because that's effectively what they are. There are two other waifus, and there's friction. There's tension between the waifus, right? And they all three of them want to basically be the top waifu on the moon. But they can't all be the top waifu on the moon. And so each of them is invading the reality system, whatever it is. And it all gets very, very confusing.
I'm going to say it's hurt in my head, you telling me about it, Rob.
Yeah, I know. And this is before you've even got into Resident Evil. See, this is the thing. Trying to explain this game, the story in this game anyway, is a lot more difficult than it should be, right? This is one of the reasons why I can recommend this game to fans of the Fate franchise, because it is wibbly and woogly, to use Andrew's words, and it is, you know, it is confusing, but if you're a fan of the Fate franchise, you'll probably enjoy this game. If you're a fan of Dynasty Warriors games, you'll probably enjoy this game to a degree. Yeah. But if you're just getting into JRPGs, if you're just getting into anime-based games, then I would say hold off on there, right? Hold on there, son. There's some things you need to know. This has a lot of talking, a lot of dialogue, right? And a lot of exposition. I mean a lot, right? This Fate Extella is determined to tell you what the hell is going on, even when you don't want to know, right?
Right.
Aside from the combat where I'm running around in circles, killing everything that moves, there are so many occasions when I was sitting there going, Reddit. I have read all of this. Just move on with the combat. Let me move on with this. The story is moving on. There's no point in complaining about the story not moving on, because the story is. And I know the story is because the game's telling me the story line by line, like I was reading a book.
Hmm.
But even that I can handle, because I play enough games like that, and so I'm patient, and I like to read anyway.
Yeah.
But the characters are so dumb. I mean, like, really, really dumb. I mean, there's a level of dumb that can only come from anime.
Yeah.
And it is the level of dumb that basically says people die when they're killed.
Ah.
These characters are not that intelligent, and you just kind of go, so basically the fate of all existence or all reality related to Earth is in the hands of, how do I describe them? Morons. Ah, sounds like the real world right now, isn't it?
Come to think of it.
It's just, you know, these characters are, I would expect more. When you watch Fate Zero or you read the light novels of Fate Zero, you have these really, really good characters who have hopes and dreams. They have achievements and sorrows. They have intelligence, and they can argue their case. There's one episode of Fate Zero, for example, that most people call the Conference of Kings, where you have Ryder, who's basically Alexander the Great, Gilgamesh, who's the King of Heroes, Ryder's the King of Conquerors, Gilgamesh is the King of Heroes, and Saber, the King of Knights. and Ryder and Gilgamesh and Saber are basically talking about the fact that they're kings and what being a king means. And this is the thing, that denotes a higher degree of intelligence than you would expect from a fictional character, yeah?
Yeah.
But it just seems like in Fate Extella, all of that is gone. And the characters are very, 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 very vapid. And you sit there and you go, well, I don't understand why I'm going out here to fight again. Surely someone's come up with a way of kind of locking this bit off and making sure it can't be invaded.
Yeah.
Isn't that something that, you know, you'd kind of do first? Like locking your front door? When you leave the house, you wouldn't leave your front door wide open so anyone can walk in, would you?
Well, no, but you have to think about it, though. If there were to be that switched on, that smarter to enough to do something like that,
yeah,
the game wouldn't have like that threat, if you know what I mean. It wouldn't have that. Well, it just wouldn't be the same, would it?
No, it wouldn't. But anyway, I have talked to you enough about Fate Extella, the Umbral Star. This kind of reminds me of those, you know, those Gundam games that were kind of Dynasty Warriors Gundam. It kind of reminds me of those a little bit, only set in the Fate universe, or a variation of the Fate universe. As I said, it's one for the fans, I think, and one for people who like the Fate games. But for other people, I'd say it's a soft recommend. If you're into JRPGs, you know what you're going to get to a degree. So you'll probably like this as well. But for everyone else, it's difficult to recommend it. So over to you, Andy.
Well, the game I'm going to talk about is the wonderfully and old-fashioned but unique Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Oh, right. Is it Breath of the Wild? Because the Switch came out, didn't it?
It was the Nintendo Switch version.
Yeah.
Not the Wii U version.
So which one do you think is better?
To me, I haven't played the Wii U version, but for software, well, both the whole hardware side of it and how smooth it runs to a point, the Switch.
Okay.
The Wii U, I think it was the last published game, like, ever for the Wii U. So it's like a signing off for the Wii U. But it's quite ironic that it's the first real game for the Switch.
Okay.
But anyway, this game, it runs. I'll talk about how it runs first rather than plot wise, because I think it's very important. The graphical tone of it. It runs at what you'd usually. It runs at 720p handheld and 1080p on your TV.
Yeah.
But the frame rate, the maximum it goes is 30, and it does drop to between about 20 to 25. So you do notice the graphical edges to it. However, where the game shines is the game itself. And the game itself is a cross between old school Zelda,
yeah,
and your open world games such as The Witcher and Assassin's Creed, that type of thing. So it's very diverse.
Is it kind of... Do you remember when, Ocarina of Time first came out?
Yeah.
And you had those huge areas that you could explore, especially on the horse.
Yes, but take that, times it by about 100. The game begins 100 years after the Great Calamity Ganon.
Yeah.
Calamity Ganon, I think he's called on this one.
Is it like Calamity Jane? Does Ganon suddenly break out into song about the Wild West?
Well, you haven't met him yet, so there's always that probability. Anyway, it starts off, you wake up in an underground sort of chamber type cave.
Okay.
And you pick up this, you get like a little tablet, which ironically resembles either the Switch or the like a Wii U tablet controller.
Yeah.
And that includes your map, and you take pictures with it, that type of thing. But you get told that this whole plot of the Great Calamity Ganon has took over and spread his, not his darkness, but his evil ways.
His evil ways, eh?
Over the 100 years. And the whole plot line up to now is you wake up and Link has amnesia.
Yeah.
So the whole plot line is trying to rediscover how this is connected to you and how you can basically stop Ganon, as all Zelda goes.
Yeah.
But when you first go out, you're meeting this old man who, it's quite disturbing and quite Nintendo in a, well, in a Nintendo type of way. For example, this old man you don't know comes up to you, says he knows everything about you, knows everything about the land, everything about what you're going to get, and even says you can rest in his bed if you wanted.
Really?
So I think that's quite really disturbing.
Yeah, this old man comes up to you and says you can rest in his bed.
Yeah, but anyway, the whole part of it, you start off in a little area of the map, similar to any free roaming game, and you climb towers, and then when you get at the top of the tower, you can unlock more of the map.
Okay.
So technically, it is very Assassin's Creed-y without the leap of faith at the end.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to pinpoint what it's exactly like. For example, it's very heavy on the free roaming. Your first task is to visit these four shrines, and I think there's about 100 altogether throughout the game. But these four shrines, they're like, for example, portal-style puzzles, your temple-style puzzles from Ocarina of Time, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And when you get to the end, you get either a new ability, so you present, or you could stop time, you unlock bombs, get new hearts on your life, that type of thing. And your whole first bit of the game is collecting these orbs and taking them back to the man, which again has very, very, sounds very, very wrong and Nintendo at the same time.
Yes. Basically, you're being controlled by the man.
Yeah.
Fight the power, man. Fight the power.
Again, the power first.
You need to find the Master Sword to escape from the man, do you?
I'm going to talk about the gameplay, because this is where every Zelda game, and this game in particular, shine very well. This Zelda game goes back to your free roaming, no help, well, very limited help element of the first few Zelda games, where you'll know what you have to do.
When you say the first few Zelda games, which ones are you talking about?
I mean the early Zelda games. Where,
you mean like A Link to the Past?
Yeah, where you'll know what you're doing. You'll get told, for example, you have to go and go to these four shrines, but that's it.
So basically, Link's Awakening, A Link to the Past, that sort of thing is what you're talking about.
You don't get spoon-fed. You have to... It might give you little subtle hints, but you will not get told to go to a particular place. You'll get told how you can find, like how you can try and find them on your map to go to them.
Yeah.
But you'll have to find them yourself. You have to do it yourself. You don't, unlike every other Zelda game as well, you don't have set weapons. You don't have set shields. You don't have anything like that. It's all about survival, to a sense. And your swords will break. You can pick up clubs, tree branches. Your shields will get damaged.
Yeah.
You can snowboard-esque down hills on your shield. The game don't tell you you can do that. You have to figure that out yourself. But, for example, it'll damage your shield. You will have to find another shield elsewhere, and it won't tell you where to get one from. Your bows wear out. It's a very hard game. It's even harder than past Zelda games. But very addictive. You even get mini games. A main element of it is cooking. You make a fire, or you can get a grill, and you cook your own meals to regain your hearts from ingredients you find.
Okay.
And I spent about half an hour just cooking different meals. So it's a very time-esque element. But I'll go on to the next bit.
Okay.
The Breath of the Wild, which is the title, is basically how the game plays. You've got different weather and different elements that you have to combat against. For example, there's parts where it will get too hot, so you'll have to cool down somehow. Game won't tell you how. For example, if you're going up the mountains, you will get absolutely freezing, and you either need clothing, you need to find some clothing to stop you freezing to death, or the game presents to you other opportunities that you have to find yourself to stop freezing to death. For example, chilies. If you find chilies and cook them, it'll warm you up for like a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So it's a very figure it out yourself, no spoon feedy esque type of game.
Okay. But if all you're eating is chilies, surely you're going to have trouble from the other side.
time will tell.
I've got that Red Hot Chili Peppers song, Other Side, in my head now.
I mean, I'm only on the, it's the near the first bit of the map. I'm still on that. But I'm guessing as the map, because it is a huge map, you do see it. As it opens up, you're going to get a lot of villages like you do in Zelda. You're going to be able to buy things. You're going to get probably your volcanoes and stuff like that.
Are you going to be able to find your horse?
Oh, yes, you've got your horse.
You got your horse?
I haven't got it yet.
You haven't got your horse yet? So we can't look at your horse?
I don't know if that was supposed to be a joke there.
Yes, it was, and you missed it. Do you not remember that song? Look at my horse is amazing. Give him a lick, he tastes just like raisins.
No.
Do you not remember that?
No.
Oh, my God. So anyway, Andy without his amazing horse.
Yeah. Anyway, Zelda Breath of the Wild. I think it's a brilliant game. If you love your old, well, if you're a Zelda fan, you'll probably love it. If you're not a Zelda fan, but you like free roaming games, you'll probably really like it, but you will find it quite hard because it does step up the difficulty that extra bit.
Okay, so cool.
With a little bit of frustration, you'll probably get through it.
All right.
But you can spend hours just cooking. It's a really good game for stuff like that.
Ironically enough, I'm the same with the Italia games. I spend hours just crafting stuff. Like, all the water's drying up on the planet. I need to put these ingredients in this cauldron and make apple pie. You don't understand, I need to do this.
It's very bad, isn't it? It's a big, massive evil covering the land, and you're trying to cook up chili so you can survive going up a mountain, or...
No, you're just trying it because you can. You're just making this food.
You just decided, let's go through this random forest that I found in the middle of the map, and I don't know why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
But no doubt it's a Zelda game. There's going to be treasure in there somewhere.
Yes. Yes. Is Zelda a recommend from you?
Oh, definitely. I think if you've got a Wii U and you're not going to get rid of that Wii U, get Zelda. If you've just got a Nintendo Switch, you really don't have a choice. You have to get Zelda. Yeah. One, it's a brilliant game. And two, it's the only one-player game I think that's out.
And three, so if you don't buy it, Andy will come to your house and stare at you. Unblinking eye contact from Andy. Sorry, you couldn't resist. Anyway. Moving on to me then, and I've got something that ostensibly is like a little bit Breath of the Wild, but not, right? And I'm sticking with the anime theme. This is Sword Art Online, Hollow Realization, which is out right now for the PS4, and I can't remember if it's out for the PS Vita as well. Now, I have a couple of issues with this. Yes, it's out for the PS3 as well. So now I have a couple of issues with this. I have issues with all the games that I'm playing, right? But some of them are greater than others. Some of them I can overlook. Some of them I can't. Now, this new addition to the Sword Art Online franchise, Hollow Realization, is by it's developed by Acuria, or however you pronounce it. It's Aquria. And it's published by Bandai Namco Entertainment, as all the Sword Art Online games have been. And as always, it's based on the Sword Art Online anime series, which is in turn based on the Sword Art Online light novels by Reki Kawahara. Right. Mm. Now, Sword Art Online Hollow Realization is basically, it takes place in a game called Sword Art Origin. Now, Sword Art Origin is kind of a restoration of the world of Aincrad, the video game world of Aincrad, which is the world that people were trapped in the original Sword Art Online, right?
Hmm.
And they've called this new place Aingrad, and they've basically developed it with the intention of researching this, and this is all set in the year 2026, which is 3 years after the original Sword Art Online event, right? Unlike the original Sword Art Online, though, this new version of Aincrad, this Aingrad place, is one complete ground-based environment instead of being multiple areas. And the castle itself has been renamed as Aingrad, and several monsters can be fought in the castle, and that's fine. If you're a fan of Sword Art Online, there are several things that will strike you right at the beginning of the game. Number one, the character design has not changed at all, which is what a lot of people like. They like the fact that these characters look the same, they act the same, they've got the same voice actors and actresses, and that's all fine and well and good. And you start off a couple of hours into the opening of the new game, and everybody's joined. You've got Kirito, you've got Asuna, you've got all of their friends, you've got Kirito's cousin, Sugaha, who's in her in-game character is Leafa, and you've got all of these people, and aside from Sugaha and a couple of the others, most of them are survivors of the original Sword Art Online game. They were trapped in the game. They were subject to that death game, and so they have survived. So they're basically a little bit of a veteran, you'd think, right? And you enter into this place, and everything seems fine. Everything's going well. This new version of Sword Art Online has been developed by a genius scientist, I think, called Seven. I can't remember her name. And she has developed a new kind of virtual reality helmet system. And so everybody is enjoying this game. You know, Kirito's going around with Asuna and all the rest of the gang, and they're exploring this new world, which is so familiar but still very different. They spent what seemed like years in Sword Art Online, but wasn't actually years. And then the issues start, right? I'm going to talk about the story specifically first and talk about the combat and the rest of it afterwards, right? There are a couple of continuity issues that strike you right from the beginning, right? And one of the main ones is a character called Yuki. Now, after Sword Art Online, there was a game called Elfheim Online. And that was the kind of Sword Art, the second half of the original Sword Art Online series. And then after that, there was Sword Art Online 2, which started off in a game called Gun Gale Online or something like that. Then went back to Elfheim Online. And Elfheim Online, the second Sword Art Online season 2, part 2 of that season, focused on a group of characters who, one of whom was called Yuki. And Yuki was a character who was trapped inside a hospital room, and her only access to anything was through in the VR world, where her body wasn't wasted and dying, right? And that's how her and Asuna got to be friends, and Asuna was really upset at the end of Sword Art Online 2 because Yuki died.
Oh.
Yeah. The character actually dies in the story. But lo and behold, in Sword Art Online Hollow Realization, she's alive and well. They're like, oh, she made a recovery. But I saw the funeral in the anime series. You actually had the funeral for this character. You had this massive thing where all the characters in the video game were all flying, because in Elfheim Online, all the characters can fly, right? So they're all flying and paying tribute to the greatest swordsman in the game, right? When the greatest swordsman in the game actually dies for real.
Oh.
Do you see? And yet this character's here, you know, as a supporting character. I'm going, but you're dead. How can you be here, but you're dead?
This is hurting my head as well, Rob.
Yeah, it was hurting my head. As soon as I saw Yuki, I thought, what the hell is going on? And I realized at that point that even though this is supposed to be part of Sword Art Online, it's a bit like Lost Song and Hollow Fragment, where it is Sword Art Online, but it's not at the same time. It's more like Fate Extella, the Umbral Sky, in that it's a Sword Art Online story, but not the Sword Art Online story. Do you see what I mean? And this is the thing. The story itself doesn't start until you meet an AI called Premiere. And she doesn't work for Adobe or anything like that. This is just an artificial intelligence, no relation to Adobe whatsoever. She's not a video editing package or anything like that. She's just an artificial intelligence. I'm just making that clear. So, anyway, Premiere, the first time you meet her, Kirito is just kind of, he's just kind of going, I wonder who that is. I don't recognize her. And he can't see any information about her, which is unusual because he can see information about everybody because that's the way the game is. And besides, it's Kirito, so he is kind of a VR Superman type character.
Yeah.
And then the story develops from there. The story, unfortunately, comes in stops and starts. Because you have these long periods where you're playing the game and you're basically doing all these missions, which unfortunately a lot of them are fetch quests. Go here, kill this, go here, get this, go here, get this, go here, do this. You see?
Yeah.
And so you have a lot of these fetch quests and most of the game is fetch quests. And the saving grace to that is that the area that you can explore is massive, and these are interlinked areas, so you can go from one area to the next. And you have NPCs, because this is basically a fake MMO.
Yeah.
Sword Art Online, it's a single-player game. It does have a multiplayer side to it, but playing through the story is a single-player game. And that's fine. But it basically plays a lot like the original .hack games, where it was a fake MMO that you basically logged into and played. So you have all of these NPCs, all of whom are just NPCs. They're not real players, but it gives the feeling of being an MMO. And when you go out into the field and you see these NPCs taking down monsters, you know, just off to the side as you explore, it gives you that feeling of being in an MMO. So it does manage to capture the essence of what playing an MMO, an MMORPG especially, is, you know, what it's all about. But there's still that veneer of fake about it because it is a single-player game when you play the campaign. And it's really good in terms of its gameplay. In terms of the actual combat, the combat's actually quite nuanced. It's there's a sensitivity to the combat that you don't expect, considering it's like several, just a few buttons, and the main one being, you know, X to attack.
Mm.
So there's certain elements of the combat that make it worthwhile mastering, right?
Yeah.
And the exploration, as I said, it'll keep you coming back in terms of the exploration. In terms of the fighting monsters, the fetch quests can get a little bit boring at times, but the combat and the exploration is what makes this game worthwhile. And then you come back to the story, because whenever the story rears its ugly head, it feels like it shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Because you're having a lot more fun doing this other stuff as you would do in any MMO, right? If you play an MMO, if you've played an MMO, you basically find yourself doing other things except for the campaign. And then when you feel like doing the campaign, you can go back and do the campaign. But in Sword Art Online, you don't have that option because it's not an MMO. It's just a fake MMO. So they have to drive the story forward. So whenever the story comes back to haunt you, it feels kind of obtrusive. It feels like it's intruding in your super happy fun time, going out killing monsters. Do you see what I mean?
I like that.
Yeah. And the other thing as well that I don't like about this is that it's overly complicated when it comes to things like equipment, stats, relationships, that sort of thing. You can build up relationships with the other characters, right? But they've got this weird system that I couldn't quite get my head around, even though I read the tutorials and, you know, read all the blurb about it, and I've been online actually looking for how to progress this stuff, and it still leaves me scratching my head because I'm going, so there's a circle, and in that circle you have these other circles which tell you about, you know, what that person character's personality is like. Is they nosy? Are they kind? Are they caring? Are they, you know, are they vivacious? And it has all this stuff there. And I'm thinking, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. This is supposed to, somehow I'm supposed to level up the affection, level up this person into potential relationship material or best friend material. How do I do that? And I'm sitting there going, this is overly complicated. This is far too complicated for this sort of game.
Yeah.
This is the thing. That, again, impedes your enjoyment. Now, there are going to be people out there who are going to be upset with me for saying it's overly complicated, but they'll come back and say, it's very, very simple. It might be for you, but I just couldn't get my head around it. And it's not that I'm a novice at playing video games, given that I've been playing video games since I was since I was 5, and you know that's 37 years of playing video games, right? So I'm anything but I'm far from a novice, and I've played more complicated games than this. But these systems, they just don't need to be there. They're overly complicated, and if they'd simplified them a little bit, it would have made the game much more immersive, because it's something that they learned with the Atelier games, right? Tecmo Koi. Is it Tecmo Koi or Koi Tecmo? I can't remember. But they learned very early on with the Atelier games, because the Atelier games are primarily crafting games with an adventure attached to it. They learned very early on, try not to overcomplicate it, because when you start adding in all these extra bits, you take away from the actual game itself.
Yeah.
And so if they'd actually focused on what makes this game good and enhanced that and just built around that, then this could have been a great game. It has the potential to be a great game. And I honestly, they've really done the fake MMO really well, right? They've done the fake MMO very, very well. And if there was a Sword Art Online MMO, I'd happily go and play it. As long as I don't have to be Kirito, I'd happily go and play it.
So it's a highly recommended game.
It's a recommended game for certain parts, but not recommended for others. This is one of those make your mind up games. It has good parts. It has parts that just don't work maybe as well as they should. And it's an interesting game, but it feels kind of patchwork. It feels like there's some good bits and some bad bits, and they've been patched together like a badly made quilt. And that's overall the effect I get of the game. It's one for fans of Sword Art Online to play. Definitely ones. Yeah. I mean, they will have some great scenes with their favorite waifu. In essence, this is kind of Waifu Wars continued, because Kirito is basically, I don't know why, he's some kind of virtual reality stud. I don't know. I don't understand. It never made sense to me. But apparently all the girls want to jump his bones. And so, yeah, you have these kind of fan service-y scenes, you know, as you progress through the relationships and stuff like that. And the relationships, progressing the relationships actually helps when it comes to combat, which is one of the reasons why I'm annoyed that it's so complicated to actually do this whole bit with progressing the relationships. Believe it or not, they could have just done it in the way of Leisure Suit Larry, where you just basically say, okay, we're going to play a mini game now. And instead of having this overly complicated system, just basically do it as a mini game. So if you want to progress the relationship, you basically have to play a mini game based on that. That's it. There are ways around it. But anyway, it is one for fans of Sword Art Online. It is one for people who are fans of .hack as well, because this is kind of this is a very, very good fake MMO world that they've created in this game. I'd say another soft recommendation from me. This one, I think, make your mind up on yourself. It's worth playing for the combat and worth playing for the MMO part, but the story, you'll probably get annoyed at. Your turn.
Well, this one, it's a new piece of technology that I seem to be trying out all these new technologies today.
Did you buy a TARDIS? Did you buy a TARDIS?
No. I bought the next best thing, though.
Really?
This the next game I'm going to talk about is Resident Evil 7 on the PlayStation 4, or the PlayStation 4, PlayStation VR.
Ah, so it is bigger on the inside.
Anyway, the game is your basic, well, it's first person, so it's completely unlike any of the, well, the camera elements of the past ones.
So it's not the over-the-shoulder cam of, like, Resident Evil 4 and 5 and 6.
And you don't get the classic tank controls from the old games, which I loved.
Yeah, but they did away with those with the remakes, well, or with the second versions of the remakes for Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah. With the old ones, you still got the, you've ran straight into an enemy before the camera changes element.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is first person, and it's set in, well, it's set this year. It's in 2017. It's actually set.
Okay.
So I think it's set a few months ahead of, well, when we're recording this. So it's about June, July time. And it's the main protagonist is Ethan. And basically, he finds out his wife is alive after 3 years of her going off and not coming back type of thing. And basically, the video that he gets warns him not to go to this plant mansion type, your classic Resident Evil type setting, to be honest, in Louisiana. So what do you think he does?
He stays at home.
That'd be a shock game, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, he goes to this mansion and there's the bakers that live there who are not very friendly, to say the least. And basically they try and hunt you down throughout the full game. It's quite a scary game. You go into this house, and I've been playing it with the VR headset on. I've tried it without. But basically you put it on and it's like you're there. It's a very surreal situation. Unless you've tried VR, you can't necessarily explain it too well.
Yeah.
But this is where the gameplay comes out to it. For example, when you're in virtual reality, you're encouraged to move your head, look into objects, for example, such as pots or boxes or higher shelves, that type of thing. So it gives you that extra immersion. You can also peek round corners as well to make sure nothing's around there before you go.
Okay.
But anyway, gameplay-wise, there's no reference to any of the other gameplay elements of between 4 and 7. There's no action. There's no unlimited ammunition fallouts. You know, it's very old-school Resident Evil. It's very, you're limited to your bullets you can get. You're limited to your health. And your save rooms are back. Save rooms are back with storage boxes that mysteriously link throughout the full game.
Are these the storage boxes where you have to arrange things properly so you can fit everything in?
No. Yeah, well, your inventory is like that. You have to arrange them, and you've got shortcut boxes at the top that resemble your directions of the controller. So you, whatever you've got equipped, you have to put on the top of your inventory. But basically, your storage boxes are back. You know what link to every other storage box in the building. And you're like, how does that happen? You save the game by going to tape recorders. And if you unlock the very hard mode called Madhouse after you finish the game,
yeah,
you need to collect tapes to save the game. So you are back to your Ink Ribbon-esque. So it feels like an old Resident Evil game in first person.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked it. A lot of the backlash for it was younger players that grew up between 4 and 6, because it's nothing like that. It's your old school Resident Evil. Your bosses were, it's not about the combat, because the bosses usually are easy, but it's more about the puzzles in between, the feeling of, you actually jump scare. It's very dark. It's in both plot line and environment. It's very, well, what's the word? uncomforting.
Okay, but, yeah. So it's kind of bleak then.
Yeah, without VR, it's a lot brighter. It's different, but when you're in VR, it's dark, it's surreal, it's scary, and when you've got four bakers that follow you around in random places, those jump scares happen a lot. Before you get to, the plot line of it, it's very Resident Evil. It's when you have a look at it on paper, you think, this has nothing to do with Resident Evil. This must be a game that's capitalizing on all this ghost horror and stuff like that, you know? But yeah, when you get further into it, let's say the second half of the game, the story gets more Resident Evil. I can't really elaborate on that, but if you play it, you'll definitely see what I mean.
Okay.
And your life bars back.
All right, excellent. Huh. Interesting.
I do highly recommend it, though, if you love your classic horror.
Yeah.
And if you've got a PlayStation VR, it's an absolute must.
Fantastic. So, okay, that's your lot for today. That was a couple of games each. So I had Fate Exteller, The Umbral Star, and Sword Art Online Hollow Realization. And you had, Andy, Resident Evil 7 Biohazard and the PlayStation VR. And Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yes. And if anybody listening is thinking, have I missed a game there? We said 5 at the beginning.
We did say 5, but we're at the we'll save the last one for the next show, which won't be long, don't worry. So keep your eyes on the skies. The next show will be out at some point in the near future. So watch out for it. But for now, I have been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And we'll see you all later.